Would you all welcome to the Mockingbird stage, Josh White from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you so much. That's really kind of you. In coming here tonight, I was kind of praying about what it is that I should play for you, and so I'm just gonna share just a little bit, kind of a backstory. So I actually became a believer 18 years ago in Seattle, Washington. A couple years before my first son was born, my wife was not a believer. I got saved first. She thought I was crazy. She thought I was crazy before I got saved. She thought I was extra crazy after I got saved. And I remember, my faith journey was really weird. I just had this kind of existential crisis in my mid-20s. Began to read a Bible that my mom gave me when I was 21 that I never opened. And I remember opening it and reading through the Gospels, and I just thought Jesus was really compelling. And so I started going to this little church, and I remember I would show up in the beginning, and the worship was something. And my background was music, and so I'd been a secular artist signed to Mercury Records, and I was a little glam rock guy. Like when I met Darcy, I wore like full eyeliner, dog collar. I looked like an emaciated heroin addict, really super pale. I loathed the sun, and black hair. And my wife, God gave her like grace goggles when she met me, because she totally fell for me, like just completely fell. But I remember when I came to faith, I would go to this church, and I was drawn to the preaching. I wanted to know more about Jesus. But as a musician, I was completely baffled by what was happening musically. Because they weren't, here's the thing, now I know that there's all different denominations represented here, and some of you guys come from churches where you're still holding deeply to this kind of rich liturgy of you know, that for some reason the belief that the only anointed songs ever written were in the 15th and 16th century, and I understand that, but we weren't playing hymns, and they weren't playing pop music either. It was some of this like weird no man's land called Maranatha from the 80s, And so I remember sitting there one Sunday, and then this little old woman next to me turned to me during this one particularly horrific song, and she said, she goes, "Can you believe it? We get to sing these for all of eternity." And I looked at her with a smile, and in my mind I'm like, "Your heaven is my hell." So this led me on a journey of A, working through my cynicism, but also a pastor reaching out to me and saying, "Hey, Josh, like I actually know your band, and I think it'd be cool if you got involved with music at the church." And I'm like, "No way will I ever do that." But I had this kind of radical, about a year after I came to faith, I had this real surrender to Jesus. And I realized that when I first came to faith, I thought, it's all about what Jesus is going to do for me. I was like kind of like Simon the magician in Acts. You know, I thought that I could buy the gospel that Jesus might put me on the cover of Rolling Stone. I'm like, "I promise it'll be you and me together. And just make it happen." And the Lord broke through that selfish veneer. I listened to a series of sermons on Romans 1 through 5 that was all about the good death. It was all about surrender. That God often gives us what we want when we no longer need it. And often what we think we want isn't what we needed anyway. And I quit my band cold turkey that night after listening to this series of sermons, repented to my wife who wasn't a believer yet, began to just paint houses, and I went on a mission trip to Russia instead and wrote my first worship song. And that began a journey of me moving toward ministry, because now I look at 17 years later, my son being 16 years old, and I've been pastoring a church in Portland, Oregon for the last 9 years. And so the music I'm going to share with you tonight really is the music that God has given me over the years. And a strong conviction as a man who loves theology, a man who loves the scripture, mainly a man who just really, really actually loved Jesus because he's awesome. And living in a post-Christian city and seeing the effectiveness of the gospel in a church that I planted a church in a city where 19 out of every 20 church plants fail within the first 2 years. I think it's primarily because you Southerners keep sending church planters to Portland and they don't know what's happening to them. Seriously, I meet a church planter from South Carolina like every month. I'm like, you can do it, but I don't know if you know what you're getting into. I'm like, look at me. I'm in my 40s having a midlife crisis. I just got a gold front tooth. You do not want to be in this city. So you know, seeing the gospel move so powerfully in a city like Portland, and out of Door of Hope, we started a label called Deeper Well. Liz Weiss was a member of Door of Hope. She's now a worship pastor in Brooklyn. And I'm obsessed actually with Motown music, but Liz became the vehicle by which I was able to work out my deep desire to be a black singer. So I wrote her songs that I could not sing myself. I'll sing a couple of them tonight, but the blessing of being a part of a community that is been primarily new believers, guys like Eric Early from Blitz and Trapper, like Liz, who came to faith at Door of Hope. And out of that was birthed basically kind of a new expression of worship with no background in Christian music. Like, we don't have the Christian radio stations that are so prevalent in Texas. We have some, but nobody listens to the radio. And so the music that's come out of our church has been kind of the pure expression of people just meeting Jesus and then just making music that makes sense to them while trying to express honestly and theologically sound songs that can bless the community as a whole. So I want to kind of challenge you guys tonight. I'm not used to doing concerts anymore because I mainly preach now and lead worship once a month and write for other artists. But I'm going to share with you kind of our music. What I'm hoping is that the words resonate. As I was reading through the words of the songs that the Lord's given me over the years, they become the reminder of me, because leading a church is hard, really hard. And sticking to having that spirit of stick-to-itiveness is really hard. And through the ups and downs of following Jesus, the one thing that has grounded me is the ability to come back and say, no matter what this day will bring, I will lift my hands and sing. And so this first song I'm going to play for you is a worship song called Enclosed by You. So you may not know the words, and you probably don't. And I promise you that I'm not like one of those guys that's going to do a 2-hour concert. I don't even believe that I'm that captivating. So I'm going to hopefully leave you wanting more, not less. You maybe already want less. I will continue to utilize my gift of monologue if I feel it's going poorly. Okay? So.
Stay with me. When I forget you're there, and will you still love me? When my love lingers elsewhere, I hear you softly speaking secrets that enclose words that softly linger with sweet repose. And I will never leave you. Leave you waiting around, 'cause I'm the one who's been waiting for you to turn around, for you to turn around. And how can I contain you when you contain everything? The house of my soul is far too small, and still I will sing. I hear you softly speaking secrets that enclose words that softly linger with sweet repose. 'Cause I will never leave you. Leave you waiting around. 'Cause I'm the one who's been waiting for you to turn around, for you to turn around.
Does it sound like I have a bad chord? I think it's okay. Tell me if it does that again. All right. Thank you so much. That song, that was from a Telecast record, and then Liz Weiss wanted to do it on her album. And then my buddy Josh Garrels, I don't know if you guys know Josh Garrels, but he's a dear friend. So him and I just did an EP together, and he goes, "Can I do Enclosed by You?" And I'm like, "Well, it's already like on 3 records, but it's fine." So his version of it will come out actually in a couple months. And so I did 2 of his songs, and he did 2 of mine, and then we did a new worship song together. It's pretty cool. He was actually, Garrels was an elder at Door of Hope for a long time, and sadly he decided that he got called back to his roots of Indiana. Why? Muncie, Indiana, no less. So I'm still a little bitter about him leaving. He's an amazing guy. You guys should have him out here sometime, because he's a gift. And his fans are serious. They're kind of like a cult. It's cultish, almost. this song I'm going to share with you is called Sweet Submission. Wrong key. Holy smokes.
Don't know if I've ever gone this far. Unfamiliar territory with you in the dark. Can't breathe, need your breath to move. Jesus, hold me through. And tumble days on end. Each day I must begin. 'Cause it's in sweet submission that gives me the strength to be real. The cross is my only your wounds can heal. Won't you please teach me to pray? I just want to talk with you. Forgive me today, I've spent so much time
tumble through days on end. Each day I must begin. Strip me down, expose my heart. With your love so severe, you ask me to love you. Jesus, hold me near. Cause this is sweet submission that gives me strength to be real. The cross is my deepest conviction. Only your wounds can heal. Only your wounds can heal. Only your wounds can heal. This next song is a really special song for our community. A few years ago, I lost a really dear friend named Craig, 45 years old, to cancer. And I think one of the things, pastoring a church, you know, I've done. We have a church that when we started was 18 year olds to 28 year olds. About 70% of the church were millennials, but. A guy that came the second week of Door of Hope was this guy, Craig, and his wife, Catherine. They're both pediatricians, and they're in their early 40s, and they both got saved the third week at Door of Hope. And 5 months later, on New Year's Eve, Craig woke up in the middle of the night having a seizure, and his wife, being a doctor, knew this was not good and took him in, and they found a golf ball-sized tumor in his brain. Mm-hmm. And they were so radically saved that I remember going and visiting Craig in the hospital, and they had removed the tumor. And with that, I think they removed a little bit of his of that filter that says like when one should talk and when one should not talk. And Craig's excitement about his faith in the face of death was so infectious. It's what I call the intersections of grace. We don't find grace often where we think we should find it. Definitely, we don't go into a hospital to see someone who's dying of cancer thinking, this is going to be the place where I experience grace the most fully. But with Craig, there was this insatiable joy that was hard not to believe because he was facing an inevitability unless God miraculously healed him, which he didn't. But I remember I walked in and Craig's like, Josh, man, so good to see you. And he had this huge scar across his head, and he just looked horrible. He looked like death. And he's like, I don't look good, do I? I'm like, no, you do not look good. And I remember his nurse came in, and he's like, this is my pastor, Josh. Tell her about Jesus. I'm like, really? Whatever happened to the idea of relational evangelism? The nurse looked horrified, too. I'm like, I'm sure Craig will do just fine. But I remember the month that he died, he called me. He was in Indianapolis visiting his family, his wife and his three girls. And he called me terrified because he just found out the tumor was back and they were giving him 30 days. And he's like, I don't think I can do it. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, Craig, I'm going to get on an airplane today and I'm going to fly out there and be with you. And you need to come home and die. And you need to die well. And so I went out there and I sat with him in the ICU for 3 days where they were trying to get him healthy enough so he could go home. and actually die in Portland. And while I was there, on the fly, I wrote this song for him called "Sweet Peace," and he made me play it for him. I'm not joking, like hundreds and hundreds of times. Like, and every time I'd play it for him, he'd be like, "That was awesome." And really, what I tried to explore was what I saw in Craig, which was a man truly afraid. He was afraid. He was terrified. And he was horrified that he was never going to walk his daughters down the aisle, that he was never make love to his wife again, that he was never run another marathon. He was a man of great health, and at the end, he was just whittled away. But the thing is I believe that courage, when grace truly captivates the heart, is not the ability to avoid fear, but the ability to live in spite of it, to overcome it, to stand with a recognition that Jesus is victor, even when it doesn't feel like it. And so this song, I tried to capture what Craig was feeling, and it ended up being a worship song that we play all the time at the church. So this is "Sweet Peace." And through Craig's death, I will say that his dad came to faith the day before he died. God uses broken things to bring about great beauty.
Oh, Jesus, meet me in this dark unknown. I'm falling apart, don't leave me alone. Lord, I believe, will help my unbelief. Oh, Jesus, so afraid of what I can't see. Oh, be my peace, come strengthen me to know your love, just to know your love for me. Oh, draw me into your grace, turn me out, set me ablaze. Intersections of grace. Oh, Spirit, come over me and fill this place. Draw me into your grace, turn me out, set me ablaze, that all may see your face in me. Leave behind your sweet, sweet peace. Oh, Jesus, give me rest in my unrest. I love you, Lord, but I confess. Sometimes I may think that you are there to rescue.
Isn't it amazing that the power of the gospel is not God's ability to free us from trials and difficulties and tribulations? I think the real power of the gospel is his ability to free us from the need to be freed. I think that the real power of the gospel is actually not that our pain and our suffering goes away in this life, but the promise that Christ is with us in the midst of it. And I think that's the real compelling testimony to those who are looking in, wanting to know. It's what we believe is worth actually investigating. I always tell my church, it's not our responsibility to make people believe, but it is our responsibility to be compelling enough to them that they believe that we believe what we say we believe. So if we can start there, we'll be doing really good as a church. There's nothing worse than a testimony about someone talking about God, and you're like, I don't think that they mean that. This song's called Enfold Me. I had Liz Weiss sing this on the record because she does it better, but she's not here, so.
Oh, draw me into your rest. You've disarmed me, I must confess. As my narrow heart unfolds, your endless life overflows. You, who is surrounded by 10,000 suns, oh, you who contain the heavens, Jesus, contain my love and heal me, and I will be. Show me your face, holy love. One glance will be enough. Show me your face and I'll forget the painful failures and all regrets. So heal me, and I will be here. And hold me close until I feel. Till I feel. I can't seem to calculate all the patience it must take to love me. Perfectly, you covered me with blood that flowed from your hands and feet. Oh, you are lovely. You are my center, you're my song, but you have been there all along. I've been swallowed up by you, and there is nothing I can do. Ooh, yes, you amaze me. And I know at times I drift away, but I can always hear you. Stay with me and where can I go to escape your love? See your wounds and I'm undone. They consume me. You are my center, you're my song, but you have been there all along. And I've been swallowed up by you, there is nothing I can do. Ooh, yes, you amaze me. Nothing but love, and I gaze into the eyes of you, find the sweet surprise of you. Lord, you're enough, enough. Yes, you amaze me. You are my center, you're my song, but you have been there all along. I've been swallowed up by you. There is nothing I can do. Ooh, yes, you amaze me.
Thank you. You notice I forgot the words there for a second, and it sounded like I was singing in tongues. Done that a few times. I'm glad this was recorded. It's a real special moment there. I should have just raised my hand in that moment. Like, he's having a moment. He's going Pentecostal on us. I'm going to share with you guys. So I'm working on a new project. Josh Garrels, I've primarily over the last 17 years, when I came to faith, I really had that serious conversion. I kind of quit writing music outside of music specifically for the church, and I think for me I needed those parameters around my life because I knew the lure of all that I'd pursued in my 20s. I mean, when I first started leading worship, I wouldn't even look up at the congregation because I was so afraid of drawing attention to myself. There were so many fears left over from just how ambitious I was pursuing music in my 20s. And so I stuck very rigidly to this idea. Like, my primary desire is to write new hymns for the church. And Josh Garrels actually encouraged me. He said, "Josh, you know, as a pastor, like, you, there's so many ways to," and he talked to me about expanding my concept of what it means to write what he calls kingdom-centered songs, or exploring the realities of life and existence. And one of my passions is I'm an obsessive reader, specifically fiction. I try to read a novel a week. I'm actually pretty obsessive about it. I'm actually obsessive about everything. But I decided this last year was a really difficult year for me at the church, just getting healthy. The church grew so fast, and I am being an artist and always nomadic, and I like to move all the time. I was talking with John earlier about Tyler, and he's the same way. It's like, I'm like, every city, it doesn't matter where I go, I'm like, I can live here. I think I could live here. I called Darcy, and I'm like, you cannot believe it. We can buy a mansion down there. These beautiful old houses over there. I'm like, what is that? Like $1.5 million? He's like, no, that's like $300,000. I'm like, what? You get like a one-bedroom apartment in Portland for that. So I think this last year, really, I think, coming up on 9 years of running a church, and it takes its toll. Ministry, for those of you who are ministers, you know, leading a community is challenging, and you get pulled in a million directions. And especially in a city as intense as Portland, where we're constantly being challenged to hold to an orthodox vision of the gospel in a city like Portland is, I mean, you have to maintain a certain level of courage every day, because you always feel like you're being targeted by some group they always want to push you on every hot topic issue. And I just, being the obnoxious person I am, I just be like, well, I want to talk to you about Jesus. Let's talk about Jesus. And that seems to, if that doesn't scare him away, nothing will. But in this last year, I really started to recognize that there is some real brokenness in my background that I've avoided dealing with. And I grew up in a really broken home. And so I started working on this, on a record that kind of explores the small, I grew up small town actually in Longview, Washington, same founder as Longview, Texas. It's a mill town, a depressed mill town, where I grew up going through many stepdads and not awesome stepdads. And so my concept of God as a father, my mom's a believer, and my mom and I have been close, but we had to work through that brokenness. And so I wrote a song. It was very, very difficult for her, but I started writing a series of storytelling songs that are exploring love and loss, and even writing from the perspective of characters that don't have faith. And I'm trying to put myself, my dad, who's a dying alcoholic in Alaska, friends that are falling apart. I watch people walk away from the faith all the time. I see marriages explode. I see people that are on fire for Jesus one week, and the next week they're proclaiming agnosticism. All those things can take their toll. And I realize that there are stories to be told within these things, and that we need to actually have a deep understanding of the world in which we live. And I'm sometimes troubled. I read one of my favorite novelists of all times, David Foster Wallace, and he wasn't a man that I could tell was a Christian, but I feel like he had a better working knowledge of the human condition than most Christians that I meet. And I think that we can do better at really understanding how to enter into people's brokenness and invite them into the hope that we have in the gospel. So this song, I'm trying to give a lot of, obviously I'm not fully comfortable with where I'm going with this record yet, but I think it's important, and it's working out some things for me, and I'm finding redemption in it, of being honest enough to say this is my past, this is part of why I am the way that I am, and so this is a song that I wrote to my mom about my childhood, and all the events in the song are real events, so it's called The Ghosts of Us Gone By. Mama, you gave us all your love, I know it cost. But with every new man, something was lost. I understand their demands, they left you drained. But it could only leave us changed.
Mama used to sing me to sleep. When the ghost of Karen sings, it makes me weep. The smell of cigarettes, the sound of your voice. I hear the words close to you through the noise. These are the ghosts of us gone by. Pale memories, faded lights. Recollections pass away. There's nothing we can change. These are the ghosts of us gone by. Mama, you gave us all your love. I know you tried. But I remember the trailer where I would hide. That night so scared beneath the bed. We heard you hit the wall, thought you were dead. Mama, it was best when it was just you and us. Food stamps and tough skins, but we had enough. When we crossed that river, thought we'd never look back. Should have known it wouldn't last. These are the ghosts of us gone by. Pale memories, fading lights. Recollections pass away. There's nothing we can change. These are the ghosts of us gone by.
The primary concept of that song, and I talked through it with my mom, is the whole idea that we don't live in a vacuum, and the decisions that we make and the things that we do, they have impact. I always say, as a Christian, we're not saved. There was so much movement through the 70s and 80s within evangelicalism that the gospel is about you and Jesus and that personal decision that you make with Christ. But we're not saved into a vacuum. We're saved into a family. The bummer thing about that is you don't get to pick your family. And families are usually the hardest to love, isn't that true? But I think the same goes true with how we live, that sin isn't done in a vacuum, that the things that we do that bring damage to ourselves inevitably bring damage to others. Those decisions, and as I say in the song, that recollections pass away, but there's nothing we can change. We can't change. I always say this, that I used to be taught when I first became a Christian that God forgets our sin. Because you use the psalm, as far as the east is from the west, he remembers it no longer. I believe that's poetry. I don't believe that God gives himself some sort of self-inflicted amnesia. It sort of flies in the face of our doctrine of God, first of all. But also, if God didn't remember our sin, why would Jesus bear the wounds of our sins in his hands and feet and in his side for all of eternity? They will be a constant reminder. And I believe that the forgetting is the absolute and total forgiveness. But we need to remember that he will take the broken damage of what we are and he will make something beautiful out of it. And I believe that the scars of Jesus' hands and feet are a reminder that it's not a matter of forgetting as if it never happened. It's a forgetting as if it will not be held against you, but it still shapes us. It still impacts our existence. my broken childhood. Still, I grew up without a dad. That's like getting saved without an arm. You don't just grow an arm back. There's a glitch that will always be there with me until God completes me in himself when I see Jesus face to face. And so I think that for me, this song was important to work out the realities that these things have shaped me. And then through that, bring about the real forgiveness, not by avoiding it or pretending it didn't happen, but by recognizing it did happen and then releasing it fully. I forgive you fully. And I believe that my mom and I didn't find that total forgiveness until we both recognized the real damage that was done, both in my rebellion against her and the decisions that she made in men in her life that weren't good, that we were able to both release that and experience real forgiveness and real reconciliation in our relationship. So it's weird, though, to share that song so intimate and so private. I feel like I'm violating my mother's trust. So I'll have to tell her that I did it and see if she really has forgiven me. She has. You know, my mom, though, to her credit, she loves Josh Garrels, right? And she's like, honey, I love your voice, but Josh Garrels. What mom does that? Even if it's true, which it is, still, keep that opinion to yourself, Mom. This song's called Absolution. I just have a few more for you, and then we'll go. So, you guys, thank you for being here tonight and letting me share it with you. This song is called Absolution.
Friendship I need, loneliness flees as I feel your glory. Like morning break around me, and as I decrease I find your release. The rush of your love, like the rush of your blood. Lord, it sustains me, it sustains me. Wanna tell you I love you, my friend. My dear friend, you say, rise and follow, for I am the way. In me is your absolution. Well, I've been undone by your holy touch, consumed by the fire of your. Lord, it tell you, tell you I love you, just to know you, you're my sweetest friend, my friend.
Got two more for you. This song is actually a song I wrote for Liz Weiss, and I'm just going to say it's the one that I was really bummed to give away to her. It's called the version that ended up on a record was really cool. It was meant to be more of a when I wrote it, it was going to be more like a follower's track, but it ended up being this kind of super cool kind of Motown jam when she did it, the way that the band played it. But it's called Truly Today, and I love this song.
We are the ones who sin, enslaved from within, but you save, hallelujah. Redemption in your hands, and feet from blood that ran, oh Jesus, you're true. Simply put your life for ours, a sin against broke your heart. You saw the pain through. We are your joy, how can it be? Accepted and found in thee. Oh, Jesus, you are the beginning and the end of faith. We have come to love and obey. So remember us, O Lord, when we come into your kingdom, may we hear you say, truly today, you are mine now and Spirit, you are true. Into your hands we commit our lives. Into your heart we will abide. Yes, you say hallelujah. And simply put your life for ours. I sin upon you, it broke your heart. Oh, you saw the pain. All your joy, how can it be accepted and found in thee? Jesus, you are the beginning and the end of faith. We have come to love and obey. So remember us, O Lord, when we come. Truly today, you are mine now and always, mine now and always.
Thank you so much. All right, since I played so many mellow tracks, I'm going to end with this song. This is when I first became a believer. I was trying to figure out how to write about my faith, and so I thought the best way to approach it that non-believers would like it is you have to write songs about Jesus, but it has to sound sort of scary and a little bit on the like gothy rockabilly side. And it worked. I'd play this at clubs, and people would be like, "That song is rad." And it's called Let Me See Your Hands. And I ended up reviving it for a record that I did when I started Door of Hope called Acor, which came out in 2011. And so, this song is called "Let Me See Your Hands." I'm going to close with this. You guys, thank you so much for being here with me tonight, and really, really appreciate it.
Jesus, let me see your hands. I want to see the holes, felt your Father's plans. Jesus, let me see your feet. Never was a man suffering so sweet. Those who have ears, let them hear. Those who have eyes, let him see. There will be a day when the King will come. Separate the weeds from the wheat. So Jesus, let me see your hands. I want to see the holes where you felt your Father's plans. So Jesus, was a man suffering quite so sweet. Scoffers scoff, skeptics smirk. Don't you see a sinner's just like me? But there will be a day when suffering.